The following is Jessica Ivan's talk, Shrink It and Pink It, Designing Experiences for Women, from the 2011 Information Architecture Summit.
The 2011 IA Summit podcasts are brought to you by UIE's User Experience Training Library, with scores of online seminars your team can access on demand. Hear the field's top experts on timely topics and the current design challenges you're facing. Get a free UIE virtual seminar at uie.com/IAS11.
Okay, thank you guys for coming, operating under a mandate to keep things rolling on time. So since I'm preternaturally punctual, I'm going to do that. So today we have Jessica Ivins on Shrink It and Pink It, Designing Experiences for Women. She works at Happy Cog in Philadelphia. There's going to be questions, and in case you haven't already heard, we're trying to get them on the podcast. So when she has her questions or a little interactive piece, wait for the microphone. All right, and I'm going to transfer the boa of authority to you.
Thank you.
So take it away, Jess.
This is so awesome. I couldn't have asked for anything better. Wow, thanks. So thank you so much for coming. I'm so glad to see so many people here, especially on Sunday, and especially because it's snowing. I thought everyone would be freaking out and running for the airport. So I'm glad you're here. My name is Jessica Ivins. I work for Happy Cog. There is a hashtag that I've created for this. If you'd like to share any thoughts on Twitter and use that hashtag, feel free. Or you can just use the regular old hashtag IAS11. So I'd like to start with the iPad. The iPad's a great product, really innovative product that we all love, well, most of us love. How many of you have ever used an iPad, even if you've just like tinkered with it? So the vast majority of you. How many of you own an iPad? Okay, so wow, probably at least half of you. Not surprising given this audience. So we have the iPad, and then we have this product. And I think all the men are about to like run for the door screaming. But don't, I promise you don't have to, because it's not actually what you think it is. It's called the iMaxi, and it's an actual case that you can get for your iPad. You can get it on Etsy for about $25. Now, you're all laughing, right? It's kind of funny. Why do you think somebody designed this? What was behind the intent of this design?
The first thing any woman thought
about the name of the product was Maxi Pad. I couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you. She said the first thing any woman thought when she heard the name iPad was Maxi Pad, and that's exactly true. When the iPad was first announced in early 2010, everyone knew Apple was going to announce a tablet, but they didn't really know what it would be called. So the name iPad was announced, and you know, the association between iPad and MaxiPad was close, and then all these jokes started coming up about tampons and menstruation, and then you know, people were making products like this. I think this is really fascinating because the reaction that women had to the product was very different from that of men. And I don't know if Apple anticipated that. Did Apple say, oh yeah, we know, we don't care, bring on the tampon jokes? I don't know if they did, but it's just really a fascinating example that I thought was kind of funny that I wanted to share with you. So then there's this product. Does anybody recognize this website, ever visit it, ever use it? Okay, one person, Livia, another person here. So not many of you, which isn't surprising because it was live for less than 2 weeks. It was a microsite and a campaign developed by Dell called Della, and it was an attempt to market its mini netbook to women in 2009. So the content on this website, here's a quote here, use your mini to track calories, carbs, and protein with ease. There was also a tech tip section that talked about how to find recipes online. So I'm glad you guys are laughing because this product didn't go over very well. And Dell took the classic shrink it and pink it reflex, where they dumbed down the content, they made it stereotypically feminine, and they assumed that it would be successful. And unfortunately, it was very unsuccessful. And in fact, nothing useful about the product was communicated on the website, really. The design and the campaign and everything, the femininity of it, if you will, alienated men. So no men were ever going to use or investigate or buy this product. So Dell received a lot of heat for this. The site was live for about 10 days and they took it down. People were outraged, people were offended. Some people didn't even think it was real. People thought it was a joke. And I wish I could say that this is atypical, but it's not. The shrink it and pink it reflex is our knee-jerk reaction. It's what we do when we decide that we're going to design for women, and rarely is it effective. So why should we care about designing for women? I did some research, and the most compelling thing that I found was that women make or influence 80% of all consumer purchases. So, wow, right? 80% of all consumer purchases, I should say in the United States, but still, that's huge. Women have a lot of buying power. Some other stuff I found. When it comes to spending money online, women are spending the majority of money online. Even though they make up less than half the online population, they're spending almost 60% of e-commerce dollars. When women buy, they buy on behalf of other people. They buy on behalf of their children, their spouses, their partners, their friends, their extended family. So women make a lot of purchases, but they make purchases on behalf of other consumers. And women are really active in the technology sphere. They're really active online. Social media in particular, globally, more women, they spend more time on it than men do. So we're seeing here that women have a lot of influence on how money is spent. They have a lot of buying power. They have a lot of influence on who uses what product, because they're buying products for other people. They're sharing experiences with other people. And they're using a lot of technology. So this is a demographic that we really need to pay attention to. It's a demographic that we really need to understand. I was curious about who else is talking about women. And what I found is that in marketing, marketers understand the buying power of women. And they've been researching women for a long time. And they've been coming up with effective ways to reach women. So there's a lot that we can learn from marketing. In industrial design, there's a group of designers called Femden. And they're in New York, and they specialize in designing products for women. And they're very, very good at what they do. They conduct extensive research. Their clients are very happy because their products are very useful and desirable, and they sell very well. They're really good at what they do, and they also evangelize principles and guidelines for designing for women the right way. So there's a lot that we can learn from the Femden, and I'll be referencing them throughout the presentation. Lastly, in user experience, there are people talking about designing for women, but it's not really a mainstream topic. It's not really getting a lot of attention. So what I did was I really looked at what other people are saying about women, and I pulled it all together, and I think there's a lot that we can learn. So the nuts and bolts, how to design for women. I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but you do have to know your audience. And it's important to remember that people in the technology and design field, most of them are male. And not that there's anything wrong with men. Of course not. But because we're surrounded, actually, by a show of hands, how many of you people work in an environment where the majority of the people you work with are men? OK, so it's almost every hand. And again, not that there's anything wrong with men. But yeah, just had to make that clear. But you know, men, just by default, they don't necessarily empathize with women. They don't understand women's needs. So it's really important, you know, for anyone, male or female, to think outside of the box when it comes to designing for women and think about meaningful and useful ways to design for them. Now, blah, 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 preach to the choir. You want to conduct user research when you can. But how many of you have ever had to work on a project where, for whatever reason, there was no user research and you had to work on a project without it? So, okay, myself included, it's the majority of you. So we don't always have that luxury. So if you can't do user research, you can leverage a lot of what's out there. A lot of it I'll cover in my talk. I'll point you to extra resources at the end. I just ask that you don't make shit up. So as long as you don't shrink it and pink it, unless you have a really good reason to, I'll be happy. So there are lots of myths and stereotypes and assumptions out there about what women want. And again, I'm glad you guys are laughing. But this is not atypical. This is very common for what we do when we design for women. Now, taking a flimsy tool set or a standard tool set and making it pink doesn't really add any value to her experience. It doesn't really help her. And in fact, it might turn her off. Like, some women might think this is offensive. Some women, because they buy on behalf of other people, if she's buying a tool set for her household, like, she's not going to buy this for her and her husband, you know? So I'll be talking actually about tools a little later and how to make them more effective, but this is a classic example. And it's based on a lot of myths and stereotypes and assumptions, because we have ingrained in us a lot of assumptions about what gender roles are and what you want if you're a woman or what you want if you're a man. There are plenty of myths that I could talk about, but I just chose this one as an example. And the myth is that women aren't into video games. So if I were to ask you, what do you picture in your mind when you think of the stereotypical gamer? What kind of person are you picturing? You can just shout it out.
14-year-old guy.
14-year-old guy. Anything else?
35-year-old guy.
35-year-old guy.
What's the difference?
What'd you say? What's the difference? Nice. So 14-year-old guy, 35-year-old guy. Anything else?
Fat Cheetos.
Fat Cheetos. Okay. So that... So, yeah, and Cheetos. You gotta have those. So there's a theme here, right? And this is the extreme of what I picture. So how many of you saw this episode of South Park? Okay, so like maybe a third of you. So if you didn't see it, long and short, this is the episode where Cartman becomes obsessed with playing World of Warcraft, and he plays it for like days and weeks on end until he gets like really fat and he gets all these pimples and he gets really gross. And then also other gross stuff happens, but I'll spare you that. But this is the extreme of, you know, what we picture these people to be. We picture, you know, gamers to be young men who probably don't have much of a life and probably don't get out much, and all they do is play video games. But that's not necessarily true. And if you do your research, you'll see that with casual games, about 75% of casual gamers are female. So that's the vast majority of people playing casual games. And by casual games, I mean games with mass appeal, like Angry Birds is shown here. Another one is Farmville, Bejeweled, Scrabble, so on and so forth. So there are a lot of women out there playing games. And to assume that if you're designing a game or you're marketing a game that you don't need to worry about women, that's not necessarily true. So this video game myth is just one of many myths that goes to show that, you know, our assumptions aren't always true, and we can't make design decisions based on assumptions. So I read a great book called Don't Think Pink. It's about marketing to women. And one of the themes in the book was when you're marketing to one particular gender, you can take the visible marketing approach or the transparent marketing approach. And we can easily take these concepts and apply them to design. So the first approach is visible design. And this is where you clearly direct the design towards women or towards men. You might even label it as something for women or for men. And that's fine, as long as you have a reason to. As long as you're absolutely sure that one gender is using this product. Otherwise, you're going to isolate the other gender, and you're going to lose customers. You're going to turn away potential users, or so forth, and so on. So a great example of visible design is the Venus razor. Now, it's called Venus. It's named after a goddess. If you look at it, the aesthetics are, you know, feminine. But the Venus razor is designed specifically for women, because shaving your legs and shaving your face are two very, very different things, very different experiences that require a different design. Gillette, by the way, really did their homework. They did their research. They talked to women. They even observed women in the shower. Well, that sounds kind of creepy. Well, they observed them shaving in the shower. So they went that far, and they gathered, you know, all these insights and all this research to design a really useful product. So it doesn't slip out of your hands in the wet shower. It fits the contours of your legs. And it fits the contours of your legs much better than it would fit the contours of a face. So therefore, it really wouldn't work very well for men. So this is a great example of visible design when it's really appropriate, when you're designing a product specifically for one gender. And I will say that there are women out there who say they prefer men's razors. Are there any women in the audience who prefer men's razors? Wow, OK, so four or five of you. And fair enough, I've heard that a lot. But the customer satisfaction research that they've done and the sales show that it's a good product, and maybe some people aren't happy with it, but there are many loyal customers, and I use it, and I'm perfectly happy with it. I think it works really well. So the other approach from visible design is transparent design. So as with visible design, you're designing for one particular gender, but you don't tout the fact that you're designing for one particular gender. You don't explicitly label it as something branded for women or for men. It meets the needs of the target audience, whether the audience is women or men. If you do it well and it's usable, and it usually ends up being appreciated by everyone. And I'll show you what I mean. Anybody recognize this product? Anybody have it? Own it? This is a flip camcorder. It's a basic camcorder that takes video. It's very easy to learn, very easy to use. Not a lot of bells and whistles, but it does what it was intended to do well, take decent video and work for lay people. This flip camcorder was designed by the FemDen. That's that group of researchers I told you about a little while ago. And their client was Pure Digital Technologies. And Pure Digital Technologies wanted to tap into the women's market. They wanted to design a product, a video camera, that would be purchased and used primarily by women. I'm guessing that it was just an untapped market segment. So the FemDen did their research like they always do. And they made it really easy to use and operate and carry, very layperson friendly. You know, you don't have to be technically savvy to use it. It's a lot of fun to use. And because it's not touted as a woman's product, it's enjoyed and used by all sorts of people, men and women alike. And it comes in a wide array of designs. You could argue that this design is kind of feminine, But it comes in all sorts of designs, even like kind of plain designs like this one. So it has mass appeal. It works really well for the intended audience, but it also works well for everyone. And men aren't excluded because it's not touted as a woman's product. I like to bring up ESPN as another example of transparent design. And I don't bring it up as a good example of transparent design necessarily. You could say it's good. I wouldn't necessarily say it's great. But I bring it up because everyone knows what ESPN is. And ESPN is transparent design for men. Now, ESPN knows that the vast majority of its audience is male. So they cater the majority of what they do towards men. But they are pretty careful about not excluding women. And in fact, in 2009, their research shows that about 4 million of their viewers just watching NFL programming alone were women. So that's 4 million women. And it's amazing that that's a minority of their viewers. But you don't want to exclude 4 million of your viewers. You don't want to exclude 4 million of your customers. So they do keep in mind not to tout it as specifically a man's product. It's not called the Sports Network for Men. The articles on the website don't start off with a man's view on NFL 2011. I would definitely agree with that the brand is masculine, but it doesn't take it to the extreme where they exclude women. There are critics who say the brand could be more inclusive towards women, and I can definitely see what they're saying. So that's why I like to say it's not a great example of transparent design, but it's a very commonly recognized and known example of transparent design. So next up, women have a low tolerance for bad design. And you might be thinking, well, doesn't everybody have a low tolerance for bad design? And you know, I think that's a great point. But the research shows that women have even a lower tolerance for it than their male counterparts. So Yale conducted a research study years ago where they took a group of men and a group of women, and they asked each group to program a VCR using written instructions. And what they found is that 68% of the men were able to complete the task with success, but only 16% of the women. So you might be wondering, you know, why is this? Why are women less tolerant of bad design? And we all know that intelligence has nothing to do with your gender. So why is this? And there are some interesting theories out there. According to the FemDen, women usually have no desire to conquer a product. It's bad, it's hard to use, they say the hell with it, or they say, I'm going to go to a competitor that's easier to use. Men, on the other hand, are more likely to suffer through the bad design and overcome it and figure it out. And this isn't always the case, but the research shows that there are times when this happens, especially with the VCR example. So bad design sucks, but it especially sucks for women, and it's really important to keep in mind that they have a very low tolerance for unintuitive design. Some other explanations, when you kind of look at the bigger picture, women in our culture are very busy. Now, we live in a fast-paced Western American culture where we're like, go, go, go all the time, and men and women are busy. Fair enough. But statistically, we demand a lot from women. Even if women are working, they're still doing the majority of the housework, the unpaid work. So think about it. She's working. She comes home. And when she comes home, she's making sure the kids have dinner. She's helping the kids with homework. She's doing the laundry. She's running the errands. She's a very busy person. So she doesn't have a lot of time or a lot of energy to suffer through your bad design. So it's really important to keep that context in mind. Now, the FemDen, they have some guidelines for designing for women, and some of them I thought we could adopt for user experience. Some of them are kind of more specific to industrial design, which is what the FemDen does, but there are some guidelines that I think we can use. The first is emphasizing benefits over features or specs. So when women are evaluating a product or deciding whether or not an experience is right for them, they're thinking, how is this product going to help me? What is this product going to do for me? How is it going to make my life better? They're not thinking about, you know, what's under the hood? What's the latest technology behind this product? They're thinking about how it's going to help them. And they're also thinking about, you know, how is this product going to fit into the lives of other people around me? Because remember, they're buying products and they're influencing decisions for other people. So not only is she buying a product for herself, but she's buying it for her children, her friends, et cetera, her spouse, and so forth. So she's thinking about how this product is going to benefit the other people in her life, as well as benefiting her. And again, she's really not interested in tech specs. She doesn't really care how many gigs of RAM it has or what kind of processor it has. She just wants to know, am I going to be able to put my music on this thing? Am I going to be able to manage my photos on this thing? Am I going to be able to carry this thing around? Just thinking about the mini netbook example, the laptop example. A great example of this is the Wii. Now, the Wii came out a few years ago, but this is just such a great example of how you can frame a narrative of how this product will help not only you, or serve not only you, but other people in your life. So unless you have a disability or something that prevents you from using the Wii, if you're 2 years old, I've seen two-year-olds get strikes on Wii bowling. It's pretty amazing. Or if you're even like in your 70s or elderly, like you can probably play the Wii. So the Wii can fit in all sorts of people's lives. This was a great way. This is a really appropriate product to frame that narrative, to tell her that, hey, you know, woman who's thinking about buying a Wii, like everyone around you is going to be able to use and enjoy this. So that's much more meaningful to her than, you know, when the Wii came out a few years ago, it was very revolutionary. And, you know, the tech specs and the cutting edge features are much less interesting to her in general than what it's going to do for her. The next thing you want to do is consider the full experience. So if you have an awesome website and a great online experience, but you don't follow through in other aspects of your brand and your product, it's not going to work for her. Marketers will tell you that when women buy products, they don't just buy products, they look for a relationship with the brand. So you have to think about, you know, the thing holistically. You have to think about the advertising, the packaging, the customer service. You know, what is the full package with this experience? And Sony Style is a great example of a company that's really thought this through. Now, Sony Style has brick and mortar stores that are kind of like Apple stores where you can go in and browse and look at the products. But Sony really designed their stores for women. They made the aisles really wide to accommodate for strollers and children. They have a concierge desk with really friendly customer service people who are more than happy to answer your questions. They also show the product in context. So this is a little like washed out, but you can see like walking through the store, you're actually seeing the TVs on stands in a quasi mock living room context. So she's able to see, you know, let's say she's looking for TVs. Oh, so this is the kind of stand that I would need to get for this TV. So, okay, this is about how far away I'm standing. This is about where my couch would be. This is how the TV would look. So she's thinking about the product in context, and she's much more concerned with this than what's the latest and greatest technology behind this plasma TV. That's much less important to her. The last of the FemDen guidelines I'd like to go over is identifying a spot on the spectrum. I call this the femininity spectrum. They don't call it that. But think about your products or your experience and the context in which she's using it and whether or not she wants to be feminine or feel feminine when she's using it. Now, certain clothing, certain personal care products, beauty products, she probably wants to feel feminine when she's engaging with those products or wearing them or whatever. But there's the other end of the spectrum as well, where there are certainly many products that she would use where she doesn't want to feel feminine. Again, the netbook laptop example, you know, there's really nothing feminine about using your laptop. There's nothing feminine about going hiking, and that's a hiking boot right there. It's a really well-designed hiking boot for women. And that power tool is actually a tool that's also designed specifically for women. Now think back to the pink toolkit that we saw, where it was just a standard or flimsy set of tools that was painted pink. This, on the other hand, is a power drill designed specifically for women. And the grip on it is smaller because women have smaller hands, so it's much easier for her to hold it. It weighs less than a standard power drill. Women have less upper body strength, so when they use standard power drills, they get fatigued much more quickly than men do. So that's really useful, innovative, fantastic design. That's really going to help her when she's doing home repair, much more so than a pink toolkit. So I'd like to go over some success stories. These are two websites that I think do a great job of understanding gender and design challenges that have to do with gender and really executing against those challenges well. And the first example has to do with online dating. And I just want to say that the research that I've done was in the context of heterosexual online dating. So this research considers men looking for women and women looking for men and vice versa. So when men and women engage in online dating, they do behave very differently. Men are very aggressive. They log into whatever site they're using, they look at women's profiles, and they say, hey, I'm going to contact every woman that I'm remotely interested in because I really want to put myself out there. So what they do is they start sending out winks, which are kind of like Facebook pokes, emails or messages or whatever the system allows them to do to really get the attention of these women. And they're really aggressive and really proactive about it. So the guys are thinking, yeah, all right, I'm in a good spot here. I just emailed 50 women. I can't wait to hear back from all of them. The women, on the other hand, are much more reserved and much more cautious. They don't really initiate contact very often. When they do, they're much more discretionary about it. But in the meantime, they're getting pummeled by all these messages and winks and emails from men. They log into the system and they see like 60 messages over the past 2 days from all these men, and they're looking at this saying like, how the hell am I supposed to use this? How am I supposed to make sense of this? Am I gonna have to look through each individual request and figure out what guy I wanna respond to? So at the end of the day, everyone gets really frustrated. The men aren't getting any responses back, and the women are getting really overwhelmed. And by the way, if you do a keyword search on the word frustrated, like an image search, it's amazing all the pictures that you get of people yelling at their computers. So naturally, it just really fit. By the way, that woman biting her computer, that reminds me of when I was a developer and I had to develop for IE6. So, just had to put that little plug in there. So this is her way. This is an online dating site that I think really tackles these challenges in a strategic way. I use her way as an example of good design in the sense of interaction design, not necessarily visual design. Kevin Hoffman, who's sitting over there, pointed out something really funny to me. He was looking at this and he said, wow, that's kind of weird. Like, it looks like the man and the woman are both out in the woods, but she's got her laptop while she's out in the woods, like looking at his profile out in the woods. So, thank you for that observation. But, you know, it's not necessarily visual design, but I think the holistic approach that they take is really effective. And what Her Way does is, like most sites, it allows men and women to sign up for free. And in fact, over half of Her Way's members are men. Women can browse men's profiles and initiate contact with men, but men can't browse women's profiles and they can't initiate contact. So what Her Way has done is they've completely stripped out that problematic functionality and they've put women in the driver's seat so women can initiate contact but men can't. And the system also guides men in optimizing their profiles. So the system will give you tips and tricks on how to make your profile more appealing to women and so forth. I've actually read an interview with the woman who founded Her Way, and she said in the interview that statistically that you're more likely to end up on a date if the woman was the one who initiated contact with you online and not the other way around. So Her Way has a commercial that I think really embodies their philosophy, and it's kind of funny, so I thought I'd share it with you.
Hey, I hope you know CPR because you just took my breath away.
Now, I've done a lot of things right. But that was all wrong. Try it again.
Hey, I hope you know CPR because you just took my breath away.
See, sometimes you just have to sit back, relax.
And let a woman take the lead. Herway.com, a better approach to dating.
Yeah, pretty funny, right? It really embodies the philosophy of, you know, their approach and everything. Her Way is just a great example of understanding gender, understanding user behavior in the context of gender, and executing against it in a really innovative and hopefully effective way. So the next example has to do with personal finance. And I just want to give you some context into how personal financial challenges can vary based on your gender. So women live longer than their male counterparts, and therefore, they need more money during retirement, because if you're living longer, you're going to need more money to sustain yourself. And assuming that you're in a heterosexual relationship, if you're female, you're likely going to outlive your partner. So you're going to be without whatever income he's bringing in or whatever he's getting. You're more at risk for having financial challenges in retirement, generally speaking, than men. Women earn less than men. Statistically, they earn about 77% of what men earn. Now, this varies. There are some women who earn more than their male partners and so forth. But overall, women do bring home less money, less income. Women are more likely to leave the workforce to care for a family member. This is especially true with women who leave the workforce to raise a family. But this is also very true when it comes to caring for a sick family member. If someone needs to stop working to care for a sick grandparent or a parent, aunt and uncle, whatever, it's likely going to be a woman in the family and not a man. And when you're not working, obviously you're not bringing home any income, but you're also not putting anything away towards retirement in the future. You're not contributing to Social Security. So you're taking on that extra risk of not having money in the future as well as not having it now. The trend is happening such that, you know, more women are graduating with four-year degrees now than men. So you're going to see more women with college debt. And as most of you know, like, college debt sucks. It's really expensive, and it really impacts your financial situation. So that's another factor that really contributes. And again, to tie this all into context, women spend a lot of money. They're spending their spouse's money. They're spending their partner's money. They're buying on behalf of other people. So they have all these extra financial challenges that men don't necessarily have, but they're in control of so much money. So financial education for women is very important. So LearnVest is a great site that I use and I think is really great. I get the daily email and I'm a member and everything. LearnVest is a site that specializes in personal finance education for women. Now, LearnVest does go over like broad topics that anybody should know. So saving for retirement and so forth, the difference between a CD and a savings account. And I'm going to breeze through some of this because we're running out of time. But it also focuses on specific topics like salary negotiation, because women are less likely to negotiate for salary. And if they do negotiate, they don't play hardball like men do. Dealing with money toxic friends, so social situations that encourage you to spend more money than you should be. And really specific stuff like outlet shopping, how you're not necessarily getting the deals that you think you are. LearnVest and HerWay, I think, are two really great examples of experiences that factor gender into the design considerations and really execute well. So if I'm going to leave you with some major takeaways, I'd have them be this. Think before you pink. So think about how you can make this experience useful and meaningful to her. And when gender does matter, think about the visible approach or the transparent approach. The visible approach is like the Venus razor, where you're definitely targeting one gender. And the transparent approach is like the flip camcorder, where you're targeting one gender, but you don't want to exclude the other gender. Or maybe neither approach is appropriate. Maybe gender doesn't matter. That's up to you to figure out to the best of your ability. You do want to emphasize benefits over features, you know, telling her how this product is going to help her rather than what's under the hood. And then identifying a spot on the spectrum. So does she want to feel feminine when she's using your product or your experience, or does she not want to feel so feminine? There's some resources here. My slides aren't on SlideShare or anything. If you want to give me your card afterwards or shoot me an email, I can definitely share my slides with you. And I can share even more resources if you have additional questions or anything. I know of some other stuff as well. So thank you. I think we have time for Q&A. I think we have like a couple minutes.
Great presentation, thank you. What about e-commerce website that actually have very divided sections for men and for women? It's the same website, but they buy differently, whether you're a man or a woman. So how would you approach that?
I've never heard of that, to be honest with you, so I don't know.
Well,
what websites are you thinking
Guild.
About?
Guild.com. I work for Guild.com, and we have a very specific, the women's store and the men's store. Usually the women actually buy or purchase in both, but men only purchase in the men's section. So any ideas on how to approach that? It's the same platform, but you have different shoppers.
That's a really good question, and I'm not really sure what to say to that, but I will say that you did mention that women shop in both, and men are much less likely probably to shop in the women's section because women buy on behalf of them. So I would think about the guidelines and the approaches that we talked about when you're designing the women's section and the men's section more than the men's. I can't really say anything more specific than that. So.
Thank you.
Hi, great job, by the way.
Thank you.
Now, what would you say or what advice would you have for me? In my firm, our marketing department is actually 99% women. And there's only like one guy straggling around. I don't know what he even does there. But it's true. It's mostly women.
With a bunch of women, come on.
I think that's what he's doing it for. But my question is, when it comes to design, I find that the women there, they do tend to go pink. They do tend to say, well, it's for women. Well, this campaign is for women. So they do tend to shoot towards these, wrap it up in this pink thing. Any advice on how I can talk to my marketing manager and just kind of like maybe update her with regards to how we shouldn't be really kind of pandering to this and really kind of like update it, make it smarter for women, like, you know, according to like what you went through?
Yeah, I would actually point her to those two bullets within marketing. Holly Buchanan has a great blog. She has the Buchanan test. It's like a really funny test, and there are three criteria. And the first one is, the idea is, are your ads stereotyping women? And the first one is, like, do you show a woman outside of the home? The second one is, do you show her not being a mom? And the third one is, do you show her not doing yoga? So, I mean, and that's kind of a funny thing. And it's not, you know, I wouldn't really call it like that reliable or that informative, but it kind of puts things into perspective. But there are really good blogs about marketing to women. I would start by pointing them to those if you can. You know, and I think it's important to know that marketers and designers like need to know not to shrink it and pink it. You're right, it is a gut reaction of everyone. It's not just men who do it, it's everyone.
I think that's great. Again, echoing what folks have said, I'm really glad that you did this talk. One of the things that I've been learning or discussing, reading about over the past 10 years in UX-oriented books, conferences, articles, is not using demographics as primarily as interaction design or behavior-based input as much as observed behavior and that sort of thing, and designing for behavior as opposed to designing for affinity or attitude, kind of different things. Can you talk about some of the trends that may have been happening in that, you know, a non-demographic approach that is more designed for humans? Or do you see a different trend, or are those stereotypes still there? And again, I would say on both sides, you know, we stereotype men, we stereotype women. When we're thinking about personas, when we're thinking about that user research and choosing, how much do you still see that demographics is important to interaction design and behavioral
I'm not quite sure how to answer that. I would say, like I said before, like nothing beats like user research. So I think the demographics or the general guidelines about women are guidelines. And they can certainly be broken and they can certainly vary. I'm not really sure how else to answer that. But one thing that someone did ask me before is, you know, should you consider age? And you think demographics, you think like age groups. And I would think more about life stage than age. It's a little bit of a tangent, but just something that comes to mind. I would think about, you know, not necessarily how old is she 40 years old? Well, if she's 40 years old, is she the mother of young children? Is she the mother of college-age children? Is she not a mother at all? Does she have a college degree? Is she buying a house? Is she getting a divorce? So one thing to think about is life stage instead of age. Kind of tangentially addresses your question, but I hope that helps.
Okay, well, you pretty much already answered my question, more or less. I was going to ask about age, because you walk into a department store, for example, and you look at the children's clothing sections. Pretty much, it's really difficult to buy clothing for a young girl that's not pink or red. And so I wonder how much the expectations that we've built in other areas may influence the choices that we make in designs for younger women, for girls.
Are you talking about, like, girls under the age of 18, girls?
Yes.
See, I can't really speak to that very much because I think designing for children and designing for adults is two very, very different arenas. So younger girls traditionally like pink. I don't really care for pink. The bow is awesome, by the way. But I think I own like one pink shirt. But, you know, pink isn't my thing. But when I was 8 years old, I loved pink. So, you know, I think thinking about children and thinking about children who are girls and adult women are two very different things. I don't really feel like I can answer that because I didn't really look into anything related to children. So, sorry.
Thank you for sharing this. This is fantastic. I'm trying to think about what are things that we do as designers throughout our work, you know, whether we do research or not, that may apply some kind of bias against women or some stereotyping. And I was thinking of how I see a lot of people creating personas. They may do some really fantastic research and get all the great facts out there, do a lot of observation, but when they're actually constructing a story, that's when they're applying their own biases. And it takes away from the research that you've done. So I think maybe, you know, that would be an interesting thing to look at in how we're constructing things like that and how we're applying our own biases. And I thought it was interesting you're showing that femininity spectrum. You may have all these interesting insights into someone's behaviors, but when you're, you know, you put the little persona together and you're describing a scenario, you start introducing a lot of those femininity aspects that may be at the wrong end of the spectrum, and they will color your design after that. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about that.
No, I think that's a great thing to focus on. Thank you for that. You know, I think, you know, we have plenty of biases on what women do. We assume that they're all mothers, and not all women are mothers. And when they are mothers, you know, being a mother doesn't define every aspect of your life. You know, you have interests, you have hobbies, you have work. You're probably likely working. So yeah, there are tons of assumptions that we make. That's a really interesting thing to think about. Thanks.
Hi. Back when you asked who works with the majority of men, I was one of the people who didn't raise my hand. I wasn't counting developers, but, you know, our IA group now is about 50-50, but historically has been more women. Our design group is mostly women. I don't know if you have any numbers, but who actually design and create these sites, is that number going up, the number of women are doing that? And then if so, if we're not an anomaly, does that mean that maybe we're going to see more and more of the transparent design? Is that what it was called? It wasn't so obviously female, but are we going to see more and more of that and less of the website that Dell did, we're going to see fewer and fewer of those types of mistakes if there are a growing number of designers and people like that that are women are paying more attention than maybe historically in the past. There have been more men, and that's where you have your mistake sites that do that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think women do bring a female perspective, but I think, like we said earlier, that you know we all tend to just innately base our decisions on assumptions and stereotypes, and women do that just as much as men do. At the same time, there's been a lot of talk in the past few years about bringing more women into technology, and the gap is slowly but surely narrowing, so I think that'll help.
MentorNet.org, or actually it's MentorNet.net. It's a site designed to help mentor women and minorities in the sciences. Well, I don't know why it took me the whole talk to think of it, but because I've actually been a mentor. Anyone can mentor or be mentored. They use the word protege, which is kind of a little bit awkward, but technically it is, but it sounds sort of hoity-toity. But I would highly encourage anyone who is willing to take on a mentoring role, whether you're male or female, that's, you know, part of the solution. Because when I was in college, I was in the Society of Women Engineers, and I think in the engineering department it was about 20% women maybe, and I don't think those numbers have changed very much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
thank you for that. So it's almost like 2:47, so I think we should probably cut it off. But thank you so much. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from the 2011 IA Summit. For more great user experience design content, visit uie.com and sign up for our free newsletter, UIE Tips.